What's going on? Happy Thursday. Happy Valentine's Day to you and yours. Bay Ragney here, Tilly Jim Radio. Tilly Jim Radio rocks. Actually, this is Tilly Jim Radio rocks. Doing a little special Valentine's Day edition. So I hope you're ready for a double shot of rock that I'm about to present to you with the bands Bravo Delta and Tour Tour. I spoke to Anthony Cooter of Tour Tour, which we're going to get to later on in the show. But up first, I talked to Brandon Davis of the band Bravo Delta out of the Vegas area. And they got a new album that's out there. Killer, killer, killer single and video that's also out there as well called Unbreakable, which we're going to get to. But you're going to learn all about Brandon and the band right now. So without further ado, here he is, Brandon Davis.
And there he is, Mr. Brandon Davis.
Hey there, Bay. How are you?
Good, man. How you doing?
Doing very well today. Thank you for asking.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I'm totally converted. You got a new fan, man. I'm digging the new tune, Unbreakable. Loving it.
Oh, that's awesome. Thanks, man. Yeah, I'm really proud of it. Really happy with how it turned out.
Yeah, I mean, you can really, like, you know, going back and listening to your older stuff and even, like, checking out videos and stuff like that, you can really, like, hear the growth and maturity of you and the band.
Yeah, I'm glad that you can hear that, too. It's we've gotten a lot of that, you know. The band's been around for a while, and, you know, some of our older stuff we were really happy with, but it's, you know, it's a bit older, and we've kind of grown quite a bit over the years, and you know, we had a few years to kind of slow some things down and really hone in a sound and kind of develop it, and so that's good that you can hear that, man. I definitely appreciate it.
That's awesome, man. Now it's funny, through the lovely world of Google, you know, Googling you and Googling the band, I came across something that I wasn't seeing anywhere else, and I found out that actually, I guess you're from Oklahoma, and it's from what I'm gathering from the post I saw, you guys originally, like, I guess, went to L.A. for the band?
Yeah, so kind of the story behind that, my guitar player, Andy Ingram, was born and raised in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I spent about 8 years there after college. I'm originally from Illinois, and had come to Oklahoma in the early 2000s and ended up getting involved with a band that, you know, did pretty well and was signed to an indie label. We toured a lot, so I wasn't in Oklahoma that much. I mean, I'd say probably about half the time because we're obviously out on the road playing shows. But, you know, in 2010, when that came to a close, I kind of started doing my own acoustic thing under the moniker Bravo Delta, writing songs, going out to, you know, Dallas and Oklahoma City and St. Louis and Kansas City and the surrounding areas, just kind of doing solo acoustic things by myself. And then an opportunity arose to come be a part of a side project with Marcos Curio from POD and a couple other guys in San Diego. And so I moved out to Southern California in late 2010 to work on that. And within a year, POD got back together and decided they were going to get busy again, and our side project went to the wayside. So that kind of left me back with Bravo Delta again, and I'm like, listen, I'm in, you know, Southern California, tons of musicians, I'm going to put together a band and kind of start this thing. And it was at that time that Andy Ingram was moving from Oklahoma to Los Angeles, and so I connected with him in LA, and we started writing what eventually became Bravo Delta's first EP, Sunset Wasteland. And so that's kind of just a little bit of the backstory.
That's wild. Now, I gotta, like, so what made you end up going to Vegas? Was it, and this is where I'm really curious, like, was it basically the music scene, do you think? Do you think the scene was better in Vegas for you to do Bravo Delta than it was in Southern California, or?
No, it had nothing to do with the scenes. You know, me personally, I, you know, LA is not my scene, right? It's, you know, we did well. We did shows at, you know, Whiskey, and, you know, we played at Viper Room quite often, and House of Blues and the rock scene, you know, made some really great connections in LA. Just personally for me, just, you know, whether it's, you know, cost of living or, you know, how crowded it is or traffic or, you know, just the state of you know, how aggressive it is towards the entertainment industry and so on and so forth, just different things. It just wasn't my favorite place. We'll just put it that way. But the reason I ended up in Las Vegas is I came there for a weekend for a show. Marcos and P.O.D. was playing, I want to say it was Rockstar Energy Mayhem Festival or something at the Mandalay Bay in the parking lot there. And so I came there, came to Vegas that weekend for a show, met a beautiful woman named Cassie, and she's now my wife and the mother of my two kids. And so in all fairness, I ended up in Las Vegas for a woman, but it's turned out to be amazing. You know, Nevada itself in Las Vegas is one of them. It's probably my favorite place I've ever lived, and I've been to many states. So I love it here. And obviously, after I moved here, Andy followed, and you know, we found a couple of guys here, a bass player and a drummer, in Roman and Brian, that you know have just killed it and been, you know, our brothers in arms, and we're pretty blessed to have them be a part of what we're doing.
Awesome. Now, how long have you been in Vegas for now?
6 years. 6 years we've been here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So now, how about like what I was reading, like in the press release for Unbreakable, you know, this has been 3 years in the making for you. Like just by the little, like I'll say, like the little context clues in my own head that I was putting together, like between the name Unbreakable and little things that were said, it kind of seemed like, you know, this 3 years putting this together have been kind of like a trying 3 years, and like you went through a lot and you've come out of this unbreakable.
Yeah, 100%. I'm glad that you really caught that, because you know, not everybody has, you know, everybody wants to know, hey, what's the meaning behind it, so on and so forth. So I'm really stoked that you caught that. So yeah, for us, you know, we started 3 years ago, started tracking what would become this album. And originally it was, you know, hey, let's put out singles every month or every 2 months or every quarter. Let's kind of keep a steady stream of music being released, because at the time it was like, that's what, you know, industry people that I was talking to, you know, they're like, do that, right? Nobody's buying albums. Nobody's buying CDs. Nobody's doing that. The trend is just keep releasing music as much as possible. And so we're like, okay, we're going to fit into that mold, and we're going to go that route. Literally the day that we had our session, our first session of tracking, our drummer goes in and starts tracking his drums. He gets a few songs in. Later that night, his appendix bursts and he goes into surgery. And then gets complications from that surgery, and he's out for quite some time. And then, you know, shortly after that, you know, he gets a job in Southern California, and so he's gone. And then, you know, I have two children over the course of, you know, 3 years, and, you know, just a ton of other things that, you know, was just kind of like roadblock after roadblock after roadblock kind of kept us from doing this and kind of kept the band slowing down. And, you know, there's, you know, months would go by and we wouldn't even have a rehearsal. So it was just kind of one of those things that, you know, we kept getting kicked to the floor and, you know, things kept dropping, but we kept getting back up and we kept fighting. And, you know, we roll around to late 2017, early 2018, and we said, we're going to do this and we're going to finish this. But what's our motive now, right? Do we want to just release singles? What do we want to do? And, you know, we kind of came to the decision that, you know, hey, we've released 2 5-song EPs. We put out a couple singles just to kind of keep us relevant out there. We've never done a full-length album. You know, let's not fit into a mold. Let's not do what everybody else is doing. Let's not, you know, follow some sort of blueprint. Let's do something we want to do. Let's do something fun. Let's do something we've never done. Let's, you know, go into a territory we never have. And that was, you know, the full-length album. So, and we said, if we're going to do that, we're going to do it right, right? We want to have, you know, songs segue into each other. We want to have intros and outros and an instrumental track and just, you know, really make it this, you know, beautiful, well-thought, you know, creative package that we're really proud of. And I think that's what we've done.
That's awesome. So like those people in the industry you talked to that were telling you to, you know, go the single route, when you turn around and tell these people that you're going to full life, their head at you, or?
Once they heard it, no. Yeah, and again, this was, a few years ago, and, you know how things change so fast, and, and at this point, it's like, we're so happy with what we did and, what we've accomplished, and that it's, at this point, it's irrelevant. But a lot of those people, we've been sending this stuff to, they're like, oh, my God, this is great, well done, this is a hit, stuff like that. So it's been all great feedback.
That's awesome. So like in that 3-year time too, like, did you contemplate yourself at any point, like just scrapping the whole thing?
Oh yeah. I mean, 100%, part of that, 3 years ago, I was in a weird space mentally as well. Right. So something really beautiful happens when you have children. And I don't know if you're, you've gone that route, or you've had kids, or experienced that. But certain things that you thought made you happy, and that, whether it was friends or situations or jobs or whatever it is, that you're going to do this forever, and this is, if I don't do this, I'm not going to be happy, kind of thing, right? And I had always thought that with music. It was like, if I don't play music, or if I don't tour, or if I don't make it, if I don't, do this, I'm not going to be happy. And when I had children and I got married to my beautiful wife, I found true happiness. I found that I don't need these other things, because this is real true happiness. I'm not saying that music didn't make me happy, because it 100% does. But, I could be okay in 50 years knowing that, that I didn't sell a million records, or whatever it is, right? Does that make sense? And so, I had this mental thing, early on, probably, 3-4 years ago, where I was kind of like, is it worth it? Is the music industry worth it? Is the business, viable? Just kind of one of those things that you kind of go through, mentally in your head as a musician, hey, do I want to pursue this, or do I want to make this a career kind of thing? And so, yeah, 100%, of course, in the course of that 3 years, it's like, okay, is this worth it? What are we doing this for? Kind of thing. But I mean, at the end of the day, it kind of always went back to, this is our passion. This is, this is fun. This is something that we're creating. We're doing it for us. We're not doing it for anybody else, at the end of the day, 100%. And so, whether or not it takes off and, 50 million people hear it, or, our 50 friends hear it, it's like, it makes no difference to us, because it's, at the end of the day, something that we've created and we're really proud of. So hopefully that answers your question.
No, absolutely. Is it kind of also too, like, thing like you point, like, it's such a part of you, the whole Bravo Delta, musical endeavor, we'll say, that you kind of almost can't picture yourself without doing it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, 100%. Yeah. It's a, it's an extension of myself, right, and in my being. So yeah, it's I could not picture not writing and not creating music at the end of the day. So yeah,
that's awesome. So how about like shows? I know you guys got a couple shows coming up. You have the big album release party at my good friend Mr. The Count Danny at the Club Vamped. February 9th.
Yeah.
It seems like you guys like really haven't left the Vegas area, like done touring or anything?
We have. We actually did a national tour in 2015. It's been a few years, but yeah, I think it was 2015 that we did a national tour with Nothing More. I think it was,
yeah, nice.
I think it was 14 or 15 dates that we did with them. Of course, this is before they kind of exploded, and they're good friends of ours, and we've I've known them for a long, long time, and they're good buddies of ours. But so we toured with them. We've done some dates with Adelita's Way. We've done stuff regionally here on the West Coast. We'll go to San Diego or Phoenix, surrounding areas, and we've got a good following there. But as of lately, no. Over the last couple of years, we haven't done too much out of town. again, because it's been kind of a slow process and building up for this and where we're at now. So as of right now, I'm working on a few things. We're going to be doing some regional dates here on the West Coast in late March. We haven't announced it yet, but we're going to be doing that shortly. And then probably in June and July, we're going to get out to the Midwest and the East Coast as well. Uh-huh. Those are all being worked on. So we're excited about that. We'll be announcing those soon. Right now, it's about getting the album out. We're going to NAMM this weekend. So, you know, lots of industry meetings there, lots of interviews and different things, you know, promoting and talking to some people that can possibly help us with a few things. We've got the Vegas Music Summit, which is going to be a similar type of deal. We're showcasing for a couple labels there. And then the album release party. So that's kind of all those things are a focus. And then there's a radio convention in February as well. So, which we've got Unbreakable being pushed, rock radio all over the U.S. and Canada, which we're really excited about. So every week we're seeing new stations start to pick it up. And so we're just trying to build some momentum now, and then we're going to go hit those markets over the next year. So really excited about that.
Sweet. Now, how about you mentioned that Alita's Way, which is based out of Vegas, and you work for another band out there, like Otherwise, it's from Vegas. Is there like a big support, between these guys who have gone out on national tours and stuff like that and national exposure? Do they like kind of help you guys along? You're the next up and coming band out of Vegas?
We haven't connected with them over the last couple of years. Again, we've done some stuff with Adelaide's Way, but that was a couple of years ago. But those guys are great. And I was actually showing the video to Ryan from Otherwise last week or the week before. He was into it. So, yeah, no, we're definitely going to be tag teaming with those guys and, trying to see, if we can team up for some tour stuff. I know that Otherwise they've been out in Nashville working on a new record there. And so from what I hear, it's pretty heavy, which is really cool. But when the time comes, we'll definitely be trying to link up with them. And Adelita's is doing a headline tour with a couple of support acts through March. So, we'll try to link up with them in the summertime as well. But those guys are great. We've done, lots of shows together and, they're definitely the homies. So, yeah.
Cool. Very cool. Now, I saw too, you actually just recently played in December a benefit show, which Corey Taylor was part of. What was that like?
Dude, that was really cool, man. I mean, first and foremost, anytime that you can kind of come together and raise, I think they wrote, it was like over $20,000 that we were, able to be a part of this event that raised, money for Star Treatments, which I don't know if you're familiar with the charity, but they, take care of kids that, are life-threatening diseases and, stuff like that. And they give them the Star Treatment, take them to concerts, give them rides places, different things like that. It's an amazing charity.
Oh, nice.
So just to be able to be a part of that was incredible. The show itself was awesome. I think anywhere from 800 to 1,000 people there. I mean, so the crowd was awesome. We unveiled some new stuff and we're really happy with how it went. Me personally, we're doing sound check, earlier in the day, and Corey's out there watching us. And of course, my fanboy alarm goes off immediately, so that was really cool. He was a really good dude. And, Jason was a great dude, so everybody that was a part of that whole thing, was awesome. So, it was a wonderful night.
That's awesome, man. So, all right, so the big date's coming up. February 1st is the official release of Unbreakable. Anything else you want to throw out there about the album? Anything special that I might have left out? Tidbits, secrets, nooks and crannies?
Yeah, anybody that is familiar with the band or has followed us, in 2015 we put out a single called Virus, and that is become definitely a fan favorite for sure. But we actually took that song because it was never really a song that we thought had its due diligence as far as the production value. We thought it could have always been better. And so we actually re-recorded it, remixed it, and put it on this new album. So it's a re-release on, you know, single on this album. However, it's taken on a new life because it just hits harder. It sounds better. It's we're really stoked on that. So that's kind of a little tidbit of a little nugget of info there for the album. But no, February 1st is the release date. It hits, you know, all streaming services and retailers, and then we'll have CDs available directly from our website, which is bravodeltamusic.com, right there in the store. So, yeah, we're really excited about it and definitely have your people check it out.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, I can't wait to hear the rest of the album. The single's awesome. I'm loving it. The video's out there. People are going to need to check it out. So bravodeltamusic.com is the place to go, right?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. And then we're on all social media platforms at Bravo Delta Music. And you can currently stream the single on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, Google, everywhere that music is streamed.
Awesome. Brandon, thanks so much, man. Continued success. Can't wait for the album to break big for you guys and truly show the world how unbreakable you guys are.
Absolutely. Bay, I appreciate your time, man, having us on, and I look forward to chatting with you again soon.
Absolutely, man. Take care, and I hope you guys get out here to Philly soon, man.
Oh, yeah, we will. Okay.
All right, man. Take care. Bye.
There they are, Bravo Delta with Unbreakable. You can get all the info, the links to the socials, links to music, etc., etc. Go to bravodeltamusic.com. All right, you ready? Second half of the show. Let's get into it. Let's do this. Mr. Anthony Quarter of Tour Tour. So put on them freaking walking shoes. Let's do this.
Hello, this is Anthony.
Hey, Anthony, how you doing? This is Bay from Totally Driven Radio.
Hey, man, what's happening?
No, you are happening, man. Come on. You know that.
Man, listen, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you sharing your time with me, man. Thank you for doing this. I know you're busy. Thank you very much.
Back at you, man. Back at you. You know, it's killing me. It's driving me crazy. I'm trying to remember. I'm here in the Philadelphia area, and you guys,
yeah.
I saw at a Tower Theater, you know,
back
in the day. And I'm trying to remember who you guys opened for. I'm thinking to myself, was it L.A. Guns?
Yeah, it was Dangerous Toys and L.A. Guns.
That's
we were
it.
All out on the road together, I think. It was crazy. We that was one of my favorite tours that we ever did. But we just, I mean, L.A. Guns had been out and been around for a while. And the first night that we started with them was in Dayton, Ohio, I think is where we kicked off. And we walked in the hotel and somebody walked by, a road manager or one of the crew guys, and said, "Hey, everybody, come down to the bar at 7 o'clock or whatever it was, you know, and to the foyer of the hotel or whatever. And so we went down there and we were like, wow, man, this is going to be pretty crazy. We were brand new, man. We had never toured or hardly
sure.
been out on the road, but we walked down and we didn't know what they were going to say, but man, we're waiting at the bar and they said, "We're fisting a kickoff 8 weeks together and we're going to have the best time of our life." And they had drinks and stuff with us. And it was just like, immediately, we just knew we were going to have the freaking time of our life, man. And the Dangerous Toys guys were from Texas. So we kind of clicked with them right away, 'cause we kind of had a Southern thing going on. And, man, we ended up having so much fun. We were getting on each other's buses. And I mean, I think eventually on the end of that, they wouldn't even let us hang out with each other. They were like, "Listen, it was like herding cats, you know, for bus call and all that stuff at the end of the night. We were little and running around crazy." And finally they just said, "Look, everybody just get on your own bus and let's do a head count. And you guys, we got to separate everybody." But we just loved them. And I still talk to Jason. I talked to him a few months back. He's an incredible singer. Man, that guy, he hadn't changed a bit. His voice is freaking strong as shit. He's just great, you know. And I'm happy. I think I see them in just a couple weeks. We're going to have a gig at the same time. So, but yeah, that's one of my favorite memories was being out with them. We played some of the most beautiful theaters too. I mean, it was like, we couldn't believe it. We were walking in these places. They were amazing. You know, the Fox Theater and.
I remember, though, like, the one thing I really remember about that show, beside it being awesome, was just the fact that I remember being, like, up in the lobby of the Tower beforehand, and there was just such a buzz about the whole show and all three of the bands with the fans. Like, it was such a, you know.
God,
like, just,
it was crazy, yeah. And Ballad of Jane. Yeah, Ballad of Jane was out for them. That Cocked and Loaded record, God, it was kick ass, man. I mean, we watched them every night. They were freaking awesome. And then, of course, Jason and them were doing Teasing Pleasing and Sporting a Woody. And I mean, it was hilarious. We were having the best times with them. I mean, we just laughed. And that it was so fun to just do it together. You know, the Dangerous Toys guys had really taken off. They were, you know, a little ahead of us. And definitely, man, crowd wise and stuff, they just kicked the crowd's ass every night. I mean, they went out there and just blew their freaking face off. It was awesome. I know what it was. Scared. That was the single that was out. And Teasing Pleasing had kind of been out, and they'd already had a, you know, pretty good run on that one, but Scared had come out. And I remember we saw it and said, "Holy crap, man, this video is fixing to blow up. It's going to be like all over MTV." And, you know, it was such a different world back then. You know, everything was geared towards, you had one video outlet that everybody was kind of vying for slots on, and radio was pushing everything, you know. And we're in just such a different world now. I mean, it is video, but everybody's on their, you know, on demand mobile crap now.
Yeah.
So it's just a different, you know, approach or whatever. But back then it was great. If you could get on MTV and get on one of those Hard 60s or Headbangers Ball or something, I mean, you could go out and get busy. It was just so exciting. I mean, to us, we got signed out of Memphis. We never traveled or anything until the record came out.
Right.
And it was just, you know, we went with our eyes wide open and walked out there and went, "Oh my God, there's a whole big old world out here." We just took in as much as we could. We just went, "Oh my God, this is incredible." I mean, our A&R guy, his name was Brian Huttenhauer, and he had worked with another there was another guy at the A&M in the A&R department, and I'm drawing a blank on his name. I'll think of it in a second. But they had signed Extreme and Soundgarden, and we were their third band. Okay. And Brian was the point person for us. He was an up-and-coming, A&R guy. And, he signed us out of Memphis, and then when we told him we were going to go to New York, we signed with a management company, Loud and Proud, which was out of Brooklyn. And they had White Line, Tyketto, Overkill, Mitch Malloy, and I think we were their fifth band, if I'm still remembering everybody. And but he said, he flew to Memphis. He said, we got in a 15-passenger van, and he said, I want to see your face like the first time you pull into New York. I just want to watch it when you say the skyline. So he rode with us, whatever it was, 20 hours or whatever it was up there, and man, it was just, as soon as we saw it, we were just like, oh my God, this is going to be insane. Yeah.
This is so different for them, right?
Yeah. It was really different. And, but it was, man, we've kind of been in a reflective mode a little bit, through this whole process of just, it was like getting hit by lightning, man. I mean, we couldn't believe it. We were just blown away. We were so lucky that we ran into the people at Ardent. We had won a contest. We went in to do some recording on a little EP we were doing, and there was a guy, Paul Ebersole, that produced our session. He just happened to be the guy, that was on duty that day at the studio, and he worked with us. And then to the people that own the studio and said, hey man, we ought to see if we can do a production deal with these guys. Let's bring them in and talk to them. And, Paul lives here now in Nashville where I live. And I've told him before, I was like, man, dude, you like changed the whole trajectory of my life. I mean, I bumped into you and I was a little kid in high school. And, the next thing I knew, we were like traveling around in a bus and doing concerts. And it was just crazy, man. But it was so fun. And to be the age that we were, and I mean, we were kind of like doing what everybody else was doing at college and high school and stuff, but we just were waking up somewhere different every day and, diving into it. So it was crazy. It was fun. It was just college on wheels, So it was a lot of fun. And if we were on the road, we were at Ardent. So we were driving them crazy. We bugged them to death. If we didn't travel, we were in there trying to make some noise or sneak in the studio or do something. But that Paul Ebersole guy, and then the guy that ran the studio, John Fry, was kind of like a father figure to us. And he took us under his wing. He brought us into the conference room, and he drew a circle on the wall, and he put like one little tiny line in it. He said, this is you, and this is everybody else that's going to be like digging in your pocket. And so he was kind of our middleman,
Wow.
And so we did a production deal with him, and then they cut demos on us and then shopped us to the record labels and let us showcase. And when I think about it now, it's like a movie or something. It feels like that was somebody else, but it was such a fun time. It was so crazy.
It's funny. I was going through stuff, and I see you guys at one point, you guys are like trying to pick the band name, and one of the options, I guess, was Free Beer. And I think,
and we laughed because we thought it was, I know probably every, that's been done a thousand times. We were just thinking, if we set that, everybody'd show up, all of our friends, we were high school kids, and we're like, man, if we tell them it's beer here, alcohol, they're coming. And, it was funny. There was a girl that we went to high school with that actually helped us pick the name Tora Tora. She actually made a list when I was at school with her, and, Tora Tora, of course, was on the Women and Children First record. She had pulled it off there, and we just kind of took it. And when we first played together, there was like a little chant that got going, Tora, Tora. It was almost like the toga chant in Animal House,
Right.
And we just said, wow, man, this actually might work. Why don't we just hang on to that one for a minute and see if it works. But anyway, it served us well. I think it kind of fit us. People have asked us about it, and we had some funny questions asked of us about, were we promoting war and stuff, the Tora 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 movie and all that. I mean, there is a link to it, but to us, it was just about getting together and having a great time. It was about celebrating. Right. The only real conversations that came out of was when we were in Europe, people, that some of our press days over there, they had asked us if that was something that we were trying to make some big political statement or something. We said, no, man, we love everybody. We want to, you know, have a great time with y'all while we're here. And, but yeah, it was funny. We just, we're very, very fortunate that we're all together and that we get to do this, kind of being as far down the road as we are now, to have run into Frontiers. And it was kind of like the planets lined up. You know, we were all thinking that we wanted to eventually at some point record together and stuff, and we were just trying to figure it out logistically and schedule-wise. Right. And you know how life is, man. You get a thousand things going on, and we have children. We're all, like, you know, rock and roll dads. And we just felt like the timing was right. The Frontiers was great because we knew their reputation, and we knew a lot of the bands on their label. We were friends with them, we were fans of them, and it just came along at the right time. And it was just, we didn't take it for granted that we said, hey man, this is you're giving us a huge opportunity to have a platform and a voice to, sure, to reach out to, you know, the people that used to listen to us and to have been friends for as long as we've been. I mean, I literally met them when I was in like high school, like 10th or 11th grade. And we've known each other for that long, and it's still the same four guys. And, you know, we never switched out any members, or we never had any kind of big blowout thing. We just said, hey, let's take a break, and then when we get ready to do it again, we'll do it. And it was kind of funny when we lost our record deal. I mean, that part wasn't funny, but we just said, hey, you know, we didn't know what to do, because that had been our life for like 6 years of just touring and recording and playing. And I was about 24 then, you know, and I was pretty devastated. I was like, holy crap, you know, we just put on the emergency brake, all our momentum stopped. And I remember thinking, hey, let's take a break. And to me, I was thinking, like, I'll see you in a month, you know, like a normal come off the road and we'll be back together quickly. But it was a big gap, man. It was a long time before we got back together. And I don't think it was any kind of like hard feelings or anything. I think everybody was just trying to process, you know, what had just happened, because we went from going like 100 miles an hour to, it was hard to get people to call you back. You know, all of a sudden it was like, man, we kind of lost our support system. And, you know, that is something you have to get adjusted to. You know, all of a sudden you're manning a lot of positions and stuff, which people today are doing that a lot.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, at that point, like, you're 24 years old, and, you know, music, it was a whole different world for you at that point, for everybody. Like, what did you end up doing? Did you stick with doing music? Did you get like a day job or?
No, I did. I kept singing. I there was a guy on Bill Street named James Govan. He was a little dude. He was about, he must have been in his late 40s, early 50s, something like that. He was a little skinny guy. He wore kind of a little captain's hat. And he was a drummer, man. He was a black guy. He could, man, sing his ass off. I mean, he was a soul singer. He sang Al Green and Otis Redding and all that, had a horn section, all that stuff. And I used to run around on Bill Street, so I always liked going in there. And James, I looked up to James not only because he was just an incredible performer and singer and stuff, but I just thought he was cool. Like, I'd walk in, he'd be in like a side booth with like three or four girls hanging around, having a shot of something, smoking a cigarette. And I was like, dude, man, this guy's got it going on. You know, but I remember going to see him when I lost the record deal, and I told him, I said, man, I think it's not if the record's coming out, it's not going to come out. They're going to shelve it. What am I going to do? You know, he said, well, you're a singer. You're just going to keep on singing. And, you know, it was just like this calm kind of came over me. He sat down and, you know, said, get yourself a, you know, drink, and let's sit here and talk for a minute. And I think he had been in the music industry long enough that he had kind of seen some action, you know, had some skin in the game. And he was like, you got to, you know, don't panic. Yeah, just chill out. You love what you're doing. You're going to get put a plan together. But I just kept singing and playing. I went as really far away from Torah. I actually started doing acoustic stuff, playing like blues things. And, you know, I found out real quick, when they called it the blues, there wasn't a lot of money for a little heavy metal singer. But I did love it. And I enjoyed it. I was meaning that as a joke. I grew up in the Delta, and that was my heart, was with acoustic stuff. That's where I started picking and playing and all that kind of stuff. And but then I eventually bumped into another guy, and we played together for about 7 or 8 years until I met my wife. And then I kind of switched gears after that. I started working for the record labels, and work for music publishing. That's actually why I moved to Nashville, was to come up here and work for Sony and RCA. And, it was cool, man. And to be a singer in a on the outside and then come inside a corporate setting, I never knew any of these conversations were going on. We were out on the road kind of in survival mode. This was way before technology and all that stuff, so I didn't know any of these conversations were happening. We were just wondering if we were showing up to the right location. But it was great for me to come in and see it from that side and have the perspective that I had as an artist to come in and from a creative side and then to be able to do all this business stuff. I met my wife and went back and got my master's degree in the entertainment business, communications. And so that's kind of what I've been doing since I moved up here about 14 years ago. And now I'm a professor of entertainment business, which is hilarious. But it's a lot of fun because I got into teaching here at Belmont University, and I teach at SAE Institute. And it's for people that are young coming into the business. It's a way for me to kind of be that John Fry that I was telling you about earlier, that mentor type guy that's kind of like, you know, I don't have all the answers. There's not a correct template, but I might can make you more efficient, make you aware of some things that can, you know, keep you out of a rabbit hole. And that part makes me really, really easy.
If you do teach, like pretty much like from your life experiences, are you teaching, you know, don't do what I did or here or this and that?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it's changed so much because, you know, we went into the digital realm now where it's kind of a different business model. But the fundamental pieces are all the same. It's just they're in a digital, you know, setting. And so those key fundamental pieces that we talk about, you know, the recording and music publishing, which is huge to me, them protecting copyright and stuff that they create. And then the touring aspect and then merch and licensing, you know, or other revenue streams that they can focus on right away if they have existing content and catalog and all that kind of stuff. So those kind of conversations are fun. But, yeah, I do actually do like some retrospective stuff where I'm telling them, you know, real life stories and stuff, and they get real tickled. You know, they're little, but they kind of get the gist of what's going on and the decisions, how one thing you do, you know, just on a knee-jerk decision can have, you know, big repercussions on it later down the line. It's like with any business, you know, when you're starting out, you kind of have to, the hardest part is just throwing yourself in the briar patch, you know, or into the fire. And that's how you learn. And some of those mistakes hurt pretty bad, but you know, you can help somebody up. If you do that, you can turn around and tell the person behind you to say, "Hey man, you know, I can pull you out of this thing. I already done this already." So, you know, that part makes it kind of keeps it fun, you know?
Well, how about, let's talk about the new album, Bastards of Beale, which comes out in a few weeks on February 22nd. To me now, maybe you tell me if I'm wrong or not, but from listening to the album, it sounds very, not only the musical style, but the sound itself just sounds very 70s.
It is 70s. Yeah, we kind of did that purposely. We went in, we were limited, number one, on time, just because I was coming from Nashville to Memphis, and so I was, traveling down on weekend or whatever that I could do. And we did tons of pre-production ahead of time so we could do it as quickly as we could budget-wise to get in and out. But I think it showed a lot of our influences. Number one, it showed how we're going to sound when you come to see us live. This record is really, really raw. I mean, it's just we've got rhythm guitars and solos and a little bit of backgrounds, but that's it. There's no tambourines. There's no keyboard. We didn't use auto-tune. We didn't use a click track. We went in, and it's just ebb and flow, and we were all in the room live, and they isolated me just in case I wanted to fix anything or if I did get it, you know, they had a good take without all the bleeding in and everything. So we were really proud of it. I mean, it was so different than a long time ago because, you know, we used to do 8 weeks at a time. We would do recording sessions, you know, for a major label. You'd block the studio out. But this time it was like, hey, we're on a budget and we got to get in and knock this crap out. So we went in and we did it in about 6 days. We did 2 days of basic tracks, 2 days of solos and singing, and then they did 2 days mixing. And that was, we sent it off to get mastered, and that was it. But it was the most fun creative thing I've done in forever. I mean, I think we just, I think we just wanted to purge a bunch of stuff we'd been holding on to, you know, just from everything from our content of our lyrics to the riffs. You know, I know I had woodshedded some ideas a little bit ahead of time that I was like, man, if I ever got with Keith and them for a second, I would want to work this up. But the majority of it was just, we just created it just sitting around with each other, and everybody contributed music. And the awesome part about doing it now is technology. I mean, we were in some weird tunings and stuff, you know, we stretched out that way. And so we could film our chord progressions on and you know, text it over to each other when we weren't together, when we were out of town and stuff, and learn the parts when we were separate. So we didn't have all this cool stuff a long time ago. So that part made us a little more efficient. But overall, the whole record is just us, man. It's as close to our first EP when we were like 17 or 18 that we've ever done. We're way down the line from that.
That's wild. Like, had you been like writing songs over the years, thinking to yourself, if we do another?
Yeah, we never stopped. Everybody was all still creative and writing and picking, and it just had to be the right time. And I think for this thing to fly, and it just, I mean, I'm not kidding. It was like divine intervention. We bumped into the Frontiers people and we were like, man, yeah, this is exactly what we need to do right now. So everybody was on board. So.
Do you think, something that's rare with you guys compared to a lot of the other bands from the era is, the four of you guys, it's the four original guys that are still together all these years later. Do you think if it wasn't that the case, I think you wouldn't go forward with it, or?
I don't know, man. I don't think so. I mean, I don't know. I know it takes the four of us to do that tour sound. It's Keith on guitar and Patrick on bass. I mean, we've all played with different people and been creative, and that part never goes away. But when the four of us crank on together, that's the band. That's what the sound is. So that part's exciting, and we enjoy it. I mean, we're still telling the same dumb jokes and all that stuff, but it's you know, it's a lot of fun. We've known each other a really long time.
That's awesome.
Excited about it.
I was going to say, you guys are doing a third anniversary surprise attack as well.
Yeah, we're touching on it. We did She's Good, She's Bad at one of the last things, which we hadn't done that one. And I don't even remember the last time that was in the set. We haven't, I'm sure we're going to do some kind of acknowledgement of it this year. We haven't like sat down and just said, hey, we're just going to do the whole album. And I know that's probably what some people, especially in our hometown and stuff, would say, man, we want you to do that. But we haven't quite done that yet. We are adding and changing the set around and stuff, but some of it depends on guitar tunings and stuff for Keith, especially on the new stuff, just from making the set run smoothly and stuff for him, where he's not, you know, stressed out worrying about guitar world. But and some of it is, you know, vocally, we want to make sure I feel good. But I, honestly, thank goodness we're rested up, man. We've been saving up for a long time, so we're hungry. We're ready to go see everybody. The record will be out February 22nd. The new video is coming out the week the record drops, which we've let out Rose of Jericho, and then we let out Silence of Sirens, and the new one is Son of a Prodigal Son. And the cool story behind that is we shot it where we shot Walking Shoes 30 years ago. We were in the same room, same bar, Handy Hall on Bill Street. We did full circle, got permission to go in there and shoot. And the guy that is running it now ran a venue a long time ago called the New Daisy Theater, is where we started. And he was the manager of the building. So now he manages the Sandy Hall, which was, there's a bunch of like synchronicity or whatever it is with all the things that lined up with this thing that just made it kind of have all these different stories and stuff. So we're excited about it, man. I just really can't tell you how much I appreciate you letting me talk to the audience and stuff. Thank you for giving me a platform, because we miss everybody. I think one of the biggest things for us is just being on stage and touring, at least for me personally, is the one thing that, I mean, I miss that the most of the times that we were taken off. It's just, it was so ingrained in us when we were little. It's such a big part of our life that, yeah, you walk out and see the crowd and the guitars come on, and you're just like, you know, I'm still get stage fright. I'm still worried. And then I walk out there and go, oh my God, I love this. No one, I like the scared part. This is my adrenaline's going crazy. So we miss that part, and we miss, you know, those people are our family. Those, the people that bought our records and listen. And yeah. I mean, they're the only reason that we get to do this. So for us to have the opportunity to connect with them is just, it's just the greatest feeling in the world. It's awesome.
That's awesome. Now, you mentioned earlier how, you know, all you guys have grown up now and kids and all that. Do you have children?
I do. Three boys, 18, 16, and 14.
So what do they think of their rock star dad?
Man, they just don't know what to think. They I mean, when I met my wife, I had kind of shifted gears and went to the business side. So they didn't know this part. They just kind of saw videos from a long time ago and laughed, you know, thought we were funny and I was hitting high notes and stuff. But they went to the video shoot. My older two sons are kind of into digital editing and they want to do film and stuff like that. So they really like seeing the process of that and how it was all put together. And to just be honest with you, man, they're a gift. They like saved my life, man. I mean, they're awesome and they're so more advanced than I was with technology and all that stuff nowadays.
Sure.
They just constantly blow me away, man. I can't get over it. But it's been amazing. But you know, now they're bigger and they have their own agendas and schedules and all that kind of stuff. And that's afforded me the opportunity to where now I can go back out and travel a little bit and have fun. And I'm not planning on slowing down. We're going to take the launch of this record. We're going to go out and start going to some of our good markets. We're going to do some of the festivals. And I just want to stay connected now, you know, I don't mean that my expectations are in the right place, but I just think that it just means a lot to us to go out and visit people and play live and stuff. It's just something it's important. It's part of who we are. And
sure.
Doing the family thing is something that none of us took lightly. We didn't want to miss anything, but we feel like, you know, they're getting up and they're independent and we're like, cool, man, we can sneak off for a couple of days over the weekend and go out and crank up the amps and stuff. So that part is
absolutely
making it really awesome.
That's awesome, man. That's freaking awesome. So, and you guys got some shows coming up. You got going on the Monsters of Rock cruise end of February.
Yes, we're doing Monsters of Rock. Then we do Rocklanta March 29th and 30th. We're there on Saturday the 30th. And then we do then we'll be at M3, and then we head out to Colorado after that.
Nice.
So we're excited, and we're adding more and more shows. We just, right now, there's some that are not confirmed yet that are in between some of those. But if people will just watch us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, we're updating social media all the time. Or you can go to tourtourmusic.com, and that's our website. So you'll see the information on there, and you can get our merch. And keep up with all the latest information.
Awesome. Anthony, thanks, man, for doing this. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Listen, thank you for letting me talk to you. That was really nice of you to do it today. And I'll have to stay in touch with you. Maybe after we get a few shows under our belt, we can reconnect and I can talk to you about the response on the singles and the record and everything. Once all the other songs on the record come out, I'm kind of interested to see what people are going to say about the songs.
Absolutely. Yeah. For sure. We'll keep in touch, and I hope you guys make it to Philly. You guys are going to be close in M3.
Awesome, man. Listen, if we come that way, please come see us, and we'll get you in.
I'm
okay?
There. I'm so there.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for this, man. It's great talking to
you. You're welcome. Absolutely. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Silence of sirens. I need a moment of peace.
Nerdy Rocks, there they are, tour with the brand new single Silence the Sirens off their new album, which comes out, I'm pretty sure, next week. It's called The Bastards of Beale. So go to tourmusic.com for more information, all the links to the socials, links to the music, and all the dirt on the band tour. There you go. And for us, go to TotallyDriven.tv or look for us on our socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That's Totally Driven Entertainment or Totally Driven Radio, or look for May Bay Ragney on all the following socials as well. And thank you to each and every one of you for tuning in. Thanks to Anthony Quarter and Brandon Davis. Check them out. They're both Totally Driven peeps. They're both, the one thing that kept popping in my mind as I talked to both of them guys is appreciative. They're both super appreciative of being able to do what they do. And you know what? We appreciate them as well because they make amazing music. So, thanks everybody for tuning in. And until next time, stay driven, everybody. See ya.